Dhanam Vishupad, Ramam Sabhuda, Sharia, Asadhara, Sabhishu, Shriman.
His Divine Grace, Lady
Namaste, Saraswati Deva, Gauravani Pacharane, Nirvikesha, Srinivadi, Tatskatiya, Vesitani. Om Agyanjvananda Sya Jananjana Salakaya Chaksur Undalitam Yena Tasmayam Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Novisham Statitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Padamayam Dadati Swa Padati Kam Vandeham Shigaro Shiyuta Parakamalam Shigram Vaishnavam Sha Shirupam Sagudatam Sagana Raganatam Vidantam Savivam Sarvaitam Savadutam Prajna Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Shiva Satam Zitam Sha He Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabando Vigatate Gopesha Gopita Kanta Radha Kanta Namostite Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavane Shri Vrishavano Sudhidevi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakapa Dhruvyascha Kripa Sinduvyavicha Patidanam Pavadevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shedvaita Gadai Har Shivasati Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 To read from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 3 chapter 18, the battle between Lord Bora and Hiranyaksha. Text 24.
Maya
Dinam
Dritam
Nirankusham
Asatamam
Akrida Balavat Deva
Vrita
Ashivisham
Puditam
Maya Maya Vinam Drittam
Maya Maya Vinam Drittam
Nirankusham Asatamam
Nirankusham Asatamam
Akrida Bhava Deva
Satsang
with Mooji.
Since you are the soul of all souls, kindly kill him and win victory for the demigods. the auspicious period known as Avijit, which is most opportune for victory, commenced at midday and has all but passed. Therefore, in the interest of your friends, please dispose of this formidable foe quickly. The demon luckily for us has come of his own accord to you, his death ordained by you. Therefore, exhibiting your ways, kill him in the duel and establish the world in peace. So this is chapter 19, the killing of the demon Hiranyaksha. Now the secret has been revealed. Maitreya Vacha Avadarya Virinchasya Niravyadi Kamritam Vacha Prahasya Prema Garbena Tat Apagena Tat Apangena So Grihit. Sri Maitreya said, after hearing the words of Brahma, the Creator, which were free from all sinful purposes and as sweet as nectar, the Lord heartily laughed and accepted his prayer with a glance laden with love. Purport, the words Niravyadika is very significant. The prayers of the demigods or devotees of the Lord are free from all sinful purposes, but the prayers of the demons are always filled with sinful purposes. The demon Hiranyaksha became powerful by deriving a boon from Brahma, and after obtaining that boon, he created disturbance because of his sinful intentions. The prayers of Brahma and other demigods are not to be compared to the prayers of the demons. Their purpose is to please the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the Lord smiled and accepted the prayer to kill the demon. Demons were never interested in praising the Supreme Personality of Godhead because they have no information of him. Go to the demigods. And in the Bhagavad Gita, this is condemned. Persons who go to the demigods and pray for advancement in sinful activities are considered to be bereft of all intelligence. Demons have lost all intelligence because they do not know what is actually their self-interest. Even if they have information of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they decline to approach him. It is not possible for them to get their desired boons from the Supreme Lord, because their purposes are always sinful. It is said that the dacoits in Bengal use the worship of the goddess Kali for the fulfillment of their sinful desires to plunder others' property. But they never went to a Vishnu temple because they might have been unsuccessful in praying to Vishnu. Therefore, the prayers of the demigods or the devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are always tinged by sinful purposes. Therefore, the prayers of the demigods or the devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are always untinged by sinful purposes. Maam Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pristai Vidaya Srimati Bhakti Vidaya Swami Dhyamane Namaste Sarasukundeve Gauravani Vijarana Nirvishesha Srinivadi Vaskatya Deva Siddharani. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sarvasya chaham ridhi sanivishto matak smritir jnanam aponam cha vedais cha savar aham eva vedyo vedantakrit vedavit eva chaham. That Krishna, he's in everyone's heart, and from him is coming remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. In other words, whatever is happening in this world is being manifested by Krishna. But there's a relationship between ourselves and the activities in the material world, inasmuch as we have the capacity to desire. And because of our capacity to desire, we can dovetail our desires either with things that are material, that is, against the interests of Krishna, or things that are spiritual, in harmony with Krishna's interests. In harmony with Krishna's interests means be in harmony with everyone's interests, including our own interests. And to be against Krishna's interests means to be against even our own interests. Mam atma paradeheshu putradvishanto vyasuyakaha. They become envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in the hearts and the hearts of others, and they blaspheme against the real religion. To become envious of Krishna means to become envious of everyone. In other words, if we don't have the proper mood towards Krishna, we won't have the proper mood towards anyone, including our own selves. But people don't know that. They don't know that the goal of life is to become, get into the proper, to obtain the proper mood in relation to Krishna. Instead, dharashya, ye bahya arthamanina, they become attracted to things which are most insignificant. Not only insignificant, but are the very causes of our problems. We're trying to solve, Prahlad Maharaj said, problems. Matira, na krishne, paratapsato va mito vipadyeta griha ratana. Everyone's feeling that this world is problematic. Everyone is coming up with solutions to solve the problems. But because they don't know what the real solution is, therefore in spite of their sincere attempts to solve their problems, they just wind up punas charvadana, simply chewing the chew, simply the same thing over and over again, the same thing that was unsuccessful last year and 1500 years ago, they're trying again with more determination, more enthusiasm. But this time, although it's never worked, this time it's going to work. Just like the scientists, they know there's no example of life coming from matter. They've never seen it, they've never even heard of it, but still they're determined that it must be possible. And therefore, their whole occupation is to create something which is impossible. But they don't mind as long as they get paid. Besides that, if you're trying to create something which is impossible, do something which is impossible, then you'll have your job as long as it will go on for a long time. That's really job security, trying to do something that will never happen. But what's really amazing is that people are so foolish that they support the scientists in their useless attempts to do the impossible. For instance, to create life out of matter. Although things are quite obvious that there is life and there is matter, but they can't understand that because they don't want to understand it. And therefore Krishna, in their hearts, is giving them so much intelligence to make it impossible for them to understand. Someone may explain that their body is changing, and everyone will admit that. Who could deny that? Of course, there may be someone who will deny that, who's more than their average crazy person, may be able to deny that, saying that my body is not changing. It's the same exact body. Sometimes you hear that argument. It's the exact same body. There's absolutely no difference between the body that I have now and the body that was in the womb of my mother. There's no difference whatsoever. So if that's the case, then see if you... Anyway, obviously they're crazy. Well, to some people it's obvious. Other people may find it difficult. And that there's a person inside the body that's changing. And some people will dispute, no, I'm a completely different person. Yesterday my name was John, and today my name is Peter. And perhaps that's true for some people. They may have many personalities within themselves. But generally speaking, we were John yesterday, and we're John today. And we're more than likely to be John tomorrow. So who is that John? It couldn't be the mind, it couldn't be the perspective in life, because when we were 5 years old, we're answering to the name of John. But our conception of life, hopefully, is different now than it was when we were 5 years old. Certainly our minds is different. The same toys that we like to play with when we were 5 years old, we may not be as enthusiastic to play with them now. We have other toys to play with. And as far as the body goes, obviously the body is different. When people say that I'm exactly the same person, actually they're referring to the soul, but they're identifying the soul with something that other than the soul. In other words, such a simple philosophy, still people find it difficult to understand it. People find it difficult to understand that when you have light, it's like here we have light bulbs, everyone knows that there's an electric powerhouse that's generating the electricity. Everyone knows that. Who will deny it? No, it's just coming out of nothingness. It just happened. Can anyone believe that? And if someone did believe it, would they be taken seriously? And that behind the powerhouse is the person. That the electricity and the system of generating electricity didn't come about by accident. That there's a person behind it. Therefore, when we see the much bigger powerhouse, namely the sun, which is generating much more electricity and heat and light in a much more advantageous way, no one is apparently paying any sun bills. Still, it goes on. Krishna doesn't say one day, he sends you a notice, your time is up, you haven't paid any of your bills. Therefore, tomorrow the sun won't rise until you pay your bill. No, because people are taking advantage of Krishna, his mercy, therefore they don't understand how magnanimous Krishna is. That in spite of the fact that we don't even appreciate or recognize the fact that Krishna is the one behind the sun, still he's supplying the heat and light anyhow. Although in the course of time, by our sinful activities and by the laws of nature, the time will come when the sun will actually disappear, along with the rest of the universe. Or here in Belgium, it's practically disappeared for most of the year anyway. In other words, by little logic, reason, use of our intelligence, we can see that this universe is a person behind it. It doesn't require an atomic scientist to figure it out. As a matter of fact, it's less likely that an atomic scientist will be able to figure it out than an ordinary person on the street, because they didn't study all the nonsensical theories for so many years that the average person, that the atomic scientist has studied. More or less, modern education means to give all kinds of word jugglery to make sure that no one, when by the time you get done with college or university or whatever, that you don't believe in God, that you believe in science as God. Therefore, it says that the demons, they've lost their intelligence because they're busy, as Krishna says, etam drishtim avashtavya nashtatmanona buddhaya prava yugra karmana shaye jagatohita. They've fallen to such conclusions and lost to themselves, they create horrible, unbeneficial works meant to destroy the world. So this is the quote given to all the modern ecologists. That although Prabhupada points out the demons, they've created atomic weapons, always threatening that we're going to drop this bomb on you and therefore you'll be finished. If you don't do exactly what we say, if you displease us, then we're going to destroy you. But we don't have to wait for the atomic bomb. It's not only that. Their very mentality means they're already destroying the world. They try to do it in such a way that people don't protest so much. They're actually participating in the destruction of the world very enthusiastically. Digging oil out of the earth, cutting down all the trees, throwing chemicals into the rivers. People are doing it very enthusiastically. And as soon as there's some leader who's not very enthusiastic to do it, then they kick him out of office. that you're not so enthusiastic for our so-called economic development. And what are they manufacturing? They're simply manufacturing things that are unnecessary. An office. They've created so many things that are unnecessary. And by some propaganda, by some education, they convince people that these things are actually something important. Although they're tuchavat, they're insignificant, they actually don't increase anyone's real happiness. They simply divert their minds from their unhappiness. In other words, modern civilization, they consider happiness when they forget about how unhappy they are. But that's possible with anything. Besides that, most of the means that they have to divert their minds, like entertainment, they themselves are the cause of suffering. Because they have nothing to do with reality. Therefore, people's minds become filled with all kinds of crazy things by so-called entertainment. They walk down the street. Previously, people would be worried, maybe there was some person picked my pocket. Now, due to so much entertainment, they walk down the street and they worry whether the next person next to them is a vampire. Or maybe he's an extraterrestrial person. They've created such fantasies that their whole life has become simply fantasy. And it's not a very good fantasy. Because, practically speaking, just to think, most of the time it's not a very pleasant fantasy they've created. And the reality that they're trying to get out of is also not very pleasant. By their sports, they're trying to divert people's minds by sports, by entertainment, by sense gratification, by intoxication, but the result of that is also quite unpleasant. And the ultimate result is that they transmigrate into the lower species of life, which is even more unpleasant. Because they don't know adharma dharmi diva manute tamasa vritaha sarvatami pari tamasha buddhisattva. Dharma dharma iti ya manite tamasa vritaha sarvatavi paritam cha buddhis partha tamasi. So this is called knowledge in the mode of ignorance. They think what is actually supposed to be done, what is dharma, what is how the laws of nature working, they have exactly the wrong idea. They have this conception that it's working automatically, that the whole idea is that the purpose of life is sense gratification, that that's the goal, and that anything that can get sense gratification, that's legal. Anything that stops your sense gratification, that's a dharma. Therefore, as people progress into the modes of nature, what previously was illegal now becomes legal, because the modes of nature have changed. They've gone into a darker mode of nature. Therefore, anything is possible in Kali Yuga. That by the end of Kali Yuga, if you can catch something and eat it, that's all right. As I said, the primitive consciousness in South Africa, I was told that their idea is that the natives there, if you kill something, and whatever you killed is bad because you killed it. But you're good because you're still alive. It's a very simple philosophy. If I kill you, then you're bad because you died. But I'm alive, so I'm good. So this is the philosophy they're aiming at. More or less, I kill you because I'm powerful, therefore I'm good. Might makes right. But because you died, it didn't matter who you were or what you were doing, you're bad because you lost, you died. This is not Vedic philosophy, by the way. This is philosophy in the mode of ignorance. But that's what they're heading for. We exploit you, and therefore we're good, because we have the power to exploit it. You got exploited, So you must be bad. God is not helping you, He's helping us, because we're good. So the demons have lost all their intelligence. They're praying to God indirectly to give them the strength to do their nefarious acts, because no one can do anything independently of Krishna. It is not that anything that's happening is independently of Krishna, but they've taken shelter of Krishna in such a way as to cause their own problems. Apparently they're causing other people's problems, but what they're really doing is causing their own problems. According to Patanjali, that if you, he has yama, niyama, asana, etc. So he says that if you steal, then people will come and steal from you. If you lie, then people will lie to you. If you exploit others, then they'll exploit you. So this is called the law of karma. So apparently they're exploiting others, but actually they're not going to get anything tangible as a result. They'll simply be exploited. Working in the modes of ignorance and passion doesn't give anyone benefit, because the very working in the modes of ignorance and passion is suffering. And the result is, will be more suffering. But the demons, because they don't want to understand that, because they've made a vow, Vrataha, to stay here in the material world and defy God. Therefore, Krishna gives them so many situations by which they think they're defying God. Although they're completely under the control of God at every moment, still, the more one tries to defy God and His laws, the more one tries to defy reality, then the more one is put into a situation of unreality. And Krishna arranges that, because that's their desire. They get their reaction. Karma, what is Krishna? Kamana sukritasyahu, satyakam nirmalam palam, rajasas tamasam palam, rajasas tamasam dukam, agyana tamasam palam, satyam sukhayate jnanam, rajaso lova evacha, pramada moha tamaso bhavato jnana evacha. This is the laws of nature. If you work in the mode of goodness, following Krishna's directions, then in the result is you get knowledge. That knowledge is not technological knowledge. It's we realize the difference between ourselves and the body, and we realize that we're Krishna's servants, that God is the controller here. That's knowledge. And when we get that knowledge, then the result is we work according to that knowledge, we'll become purified. But if we work in the mode of passion, thinking that I'm going to control material nature, and so eventually I can enjoy it, then we become greedy. Because at first, working the mode of passion for results, we may work even according to some way that actually works, that actually gives us the fruit of result. But as soon as we enjoy, then we become greedy for more enjoyment. As soon as we satisfy our lust, although apparently it's satisfaction, but the next moment the lust becomes stronger, then we have to work harder to satisfy it the next time. So lust means it turns into greed, and therefore greed, because it cannot be ultimately satisfied, turns into unhappiness, dukkha. And then, as we become unhappy, we try to remove our unhappiness by intoxication or other means, and the result is we become foolish. Whatever little intelligence we had left is taken away, and we become mad, foolish, ignorant. And the result of that is the only thing we're left with is complete ignorance. So that is the direction that modern society is heading for. They made the goal of their life to gratify their senses, Achintyama Prameyam Sha Pralayantam Upashitya Kama Bhoga Paramo Egava Iti Nischitya. They believe that to gratify the senses unto the end of life, that's the necessity of human civilization. Panavijaya lent me this video, which I watched a little bit of, because it was so, I don't know, I watched a little, so foolish. People talking about God. And these are the big leaders, these are the, some of the top leaders in the world, in religious society, atheistic society, whatever. You know, the bishops and the cardinals, whatever, and the atheists, the agnostics, they're all equally stupid, foolish, no knowledge whatsoever. Maybe they didn't want to put on anyone with knowledge. I didn't watch the whole thing. Do the devotees get on there at all? Explain things? Do they allow the devotees to come and explain?
Oh, very short. Then they ask names of God and things of kind of president.
Well, that was at the very beginning. That was just at the beginning. You later on?
Later on, you just say names of God and you say Radha Krishna. Mataji is also speaking in English, but also the one who's presenting for India. She has no idea.
No idea whatsoever. No one had any idea. No intelligence whatsoever. Therefore, the conclusion of the program is that God is just a crutch that no one knows anything about, and that the real goal of life is whatever that crutch is, just utilize it for your sense gratification. That's what you need. But it doesn't really make any difference, because after all, the real goal is always there for everyone. Gratify your senses with God, without God, somehow or another, whatever you want. Because even at the beginning they asked, what's his name, Hugh Hefner? From Playboy magazine? They had him with his bunnies in the bath. Asking, you know, who's God? So for him, you know, his opinion is as good as the rabbi or the bishop, you know. He had his opinion too. It's all one. The whole show is completely, you know, impersonalist, materialistic, demoniac. But that's the, you know, seemingly it's very objective presentation, reality. People searching. Has anyone experienced God? And you have a whole lot of completely foolish people from all walks of life, including religious life, who absolutely know nothing. It's a complete sentence. And even that has some experience, the best it is something just coincidental. Something mystical. Because they're in ignorance. And therefore, what can you expect from people in ignorance? They think, yeah, that's right, we've examined, we looked all over the universe. As one Russian astronaut, cosmonaut, went up, looked around and said, I couldn't find God. I was up there above the clouds. He wasn't, looked at the clouds, he wasn't there, he wasn't anywhere. So, therefore, there's no God. And therefore, the only thing that we have left with is somehow or another you gratify your senses. You do it more subtly if you can get into the realm of profit, adoration, or false prestige. Well, prestige—that's quite subtle. You're a good, you're a real good person because you're not going to just by prestige. You're not going to exploit anyone so much, not too much. But profit, adoration, distinction—that's not so bad. Just gratify your senses in such a way as that you don't eat too many other people. You don't exploit too many other people. And if you do, make sure that you don't exploit your friends. Just get together with your friends and exploit others. Then you're a good person. Because, as we know by the nature of reality, is that your friends get together and they eat someone, and then one by one they eat each other. And the person who survives, he's a good person. He was dharmic. So that's the mentality, that primitive mentality of the aborigines, who are thinking, I'm alive, therefore I'm good, you're dead, therefore you're bad. That is the philosophy of the whole world. Just changed a little bit. The terminologies have changed around, covered over, glossed over, painted, a few lights put on it. But ultimately, that is the philosophy. I'm exploiting you, therefore I'm good, I'm powerful. And you're being exploited, so you're actually bad, because you're exploited. You deserve it. But exploited, being exploited, ultimately, people have lost their intelligence. They don't realize that behind everything, all they're doing is praying to Krishna. The demons are praying to Krishna, the devotees are praying to Krishna, but the demons don't know what to pray for. Therefore they pray for something which is ultimately detrimental to themselves. Just like Vrikasura, he prayed that whosoever head he touched would be smashed into so many pieces. He underwent great austerity. How many people will cut their flesh and offer it into a fire? Swaha. Swaha. And then he took his own head, his hair, and he took a knife and was going to cut off his own head and throw it into the fire. Swaha. So what was the result of his austerity? Such an austerity is that he wound up touching his own head and cracking into thousands of pieces. You think that he suffered so much, poor demon, little misdirected, mother didn't take care of him when he was younger, because he had so many complexes, you know, he should turn out, and he suffered so much. No, he suffered so much, and by his demoniac mentality and his activities, he'll suffer more in the future. He hasn't suffered enough yet, because that's the way it is. Until he wakes up, the suffering, the punishment, is not meant for simply suffering. It's meant to wake up. It's self-inflicted. It's that you take a stick and you're hitting yourself with a stick, and you say, you know, stop hitting me. Well, the stick's not hitting you. You're hitting yourself with a stick. All you do is have to recognize that I'm hitting myself with a stick. If I want to stop, I just have to stop. So until people wake up to the fact that they're being controlled, and that they should recognize that they're being controlled by God, and they should follow God's direction, then they won't be put in a situation which is undesirable. That their only problem is, the main problem, is that they deny it to follow Krishna's instructions. Krishna says, stop hitting yourself. And they say, forget it, we never listen to you. You're the last person we're going to listen to. Just to spite you, we're going to hit ourselves. Whack! And we're going to hit ourselves harder, just to spite you. Just to make sure that you suffer, we're going to hit ourselves even harder. Stop hitting yourself. Stop hitting. No! Quack, quack, quack. So who's going to suffer? Krishna's going to suffer from our hitting ourselves so hard? Or we're going to suffer? We don't want to listen to you. Go away. Stop, stop. No, go away. Don't bother us. So Krishna, he sends his representatives. He comes personally. He gives the scriptures this knowledge. And people say, oh, this is ignorance. Go away from us. Stop putting obstacles for our hitting ourselves. We're enjoying ourselves. The harder we hit, the more happy we become. That's what we learn in school. That's the golden rule. The golden rule is, who has the goal, they rule. So people will think like that. But those who are a little sincere, now they'll hear from Krishna or from Krishna's representatives. They'll understand that there is a God, that we are subordinate to Krishna, and that we should follow his instructions so that we can put ourselves in a position where our subordination will be beneficial for ourselves and others. Otherwise, then, punat punas charvita charvanana andaya tandera pagiyamanas te pisha tantra uru dhamibhada. If we follow blind persons, then the result is, as they fall into difficulty, we'll fall into difficulty with them. So they may be attracted to so many so-called leaders, but if they're not Krishna's devotees, then they're simply their activities are shrava eva hi kevalam, simply waste of time. I'll stop there. Thank you. Any comments? Yes.
I have a question. In the very beginning, you were telling about that. So yesterday we had a discussion about that in the devotion class. So Shrupa's time is free. He says, okay, if somebody is testing Krishna, the Lord is going to be either in the case or you kill yourself.
First things, you should try to defeat them with arguments. Mm-hmm. And if you can't do that, then you should cut their tongue out and then take your own life. And if you can't do that, then you should go away. So obviously in this age, there would be a lot of tongues on the ground. And there wouldn't be very, there's not so many devotees anyhow, so they'd all disappear. That wouldn't be very helpful. As far as, so the two options that are actually recommended is either you try to defeat them with arguments, or you go away from the place. So we have to learn the arguments. That's our first business. You have to understand how to present things in such a way that they're defeated. That may not be just by verbal arguments. Most people have no knowledge. There's no question of arguing with anyone. They have nothing, there's no argument. It's most of people's activities are simply social. They're not philosophical. People, they have their so-called teaching philosophy or science, whatever, but they don't really believe in these things. They're just doing it because they make a living from doing it. So it's really a social thing. They know how to socially organize their lives is that they please whoever is the head of the department and they get a job. Therefore, defeating them may be just to make friends with them, give them some prasadam, get them engaged in Krishna service. Try to argue with them may be we may not be able to do anything. If they have nothing to do, simply to get angry. I know one time I was trying to distribute books to these Christians in America before I had much experience trying to do it. And I defeat all their arguments about meat eating, whatever else. And then they get very angry. They say, you're definitely the devil. He said, because only the devil could be so clever to come up with such arguments. So that's not a very good strategy. But if you're just friends with people and get them engaged in Krishna service, that's generally the best thing to do. If we can't do that, just go away, find someone else you can engage. Because everyone is misdirected in this age, right? Even we're misdirected. We're out there, where we're preaching, whatever we're doing, not only to save others, we're trying to save ourselves too. Because we're also infused with all this nonsense philosophy and understandings of life. Something from male, something from female, and they put them together. They haven't created anything.
It's also a problem with I heard also people say that they just take like two cells from a male or a female and then they do something.
Yeah, but cells, they have to take two cells. They didn't create it out of nothing. They have to create it out of things that are alive. Now, if they can take two dead cells and put them together and create something that's alive, we'll appreciate that. Had to take two living cells. Yeah, of course it is. Otherwise, how is it alive? There's souls even in the atoms. Ananda Rasta Paramanu Charanda Rasta. Krishna's in the atom too. But generally speaking, in every cell, If it's alive, there must be something alive. That's the soul. It's only the soul that's alive. The energy, material energy is unconscious. Anything else? Okay, grant the direction of Bhagavatam Kijai, Shri Prabhupada Kijai, Gaur Pranayam.